Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is your boy Dylan Matthews hanging out with Joe Patrick, our very own Falcons insider and reporter. We're live here in the Ticketmaster Studios at Flowery Branch at Falcons training camp. Falcons practice getting underway here in about, what, an hour and 15 minutes, I believe. 11:15 is the set start time for Falcons practice, so we're getting you ready for that. Make sure you follow the radio station at 929 The Game. Follow myself at underscore Dylan Matthews on all social media platforms. And follow Mr. Joe Patrick. He's at JAPatrick200 on X, Twitter, again, whatever you want to call it these days. But Joe, want to get back into some Falcons discussion because, man, you were telling me something. We were on a call yesterday just kind of talking about what we want to do for the show today. And you were telling me something really, really interesting. And obviously, everybody has heard about and talked about the Falcons having a GoPro on the helmet of Kirk Cousins. And, you know, one of the reasons is to just kind of, one, be able to hear the huddle and kind of the, as you talked about again on one of your training camp recap videos, which again, follow Joe Patrick at JAPatrick200. He's putting those out after pretty much every day of Falcons practice. So make sure you follow him there. That's good stuff. But one of the things you were talking about in those videos is they want to, the Falcons, Zach Robinson, Raheem Morris, and the Falcons staff, they want to get a idea of how Kirk Cousins is calling the plays, how players are responding to those plays, and they also want to get a point of view when the play is actually happening of, you know, the progressions Kirk Cousins is going through and things of that nature. But it's deeper than that. There's also levels to it.
Yeah.
Another thing that you were telling me that they also want to use it for is eventually – they are going to kind of find a way to implement the point of view that Kirk Cousins is seeing when they're running certain plays, and they're going to implement that into how they kind of distribute the playbook and show plays. So can you talk to
potentially
us about that a little bit?
Yeah, potentially. And this is something I wasn't even really aware of because it came up during one of the practice days. We were talking to the coaches afterwards, and they were talking about exactly this, exactly what you just described. Kirk Cousins was saying how it's nice to, you know, be able to go back and just, yeah, see how players are reacting. Obviously, you've got the footage. He was kind of joking that you can also hear, like, when you tell a bad joke and people don't respond, you can be like, okay, yeah, don't tell that one again. You know, we'll switch it up. But something that I found out afterwards, or I just saw some commentary by a colleague covers the NFL, Jordan Rodrigue, who's a great reporter. She covers the Rams, I think, primarily for The Athletic. But she did a great podcast series called The Play Callers on there, which is I'd highly recommend. That was released a couple years ago. But she added on to a story from Josh Kendall, who obviously covers the Falcons here in the press corps, who had written about this. And she added that, and I retweeted this so you can see it on my timeline. She said, cameras on helmets are neat because some sports scientists believe that teams can start building out their own proprietary virtual reality programming to help players get more immersive film study. So, for example, a quarterback, quote, on the field versus scout team while not actually being there. But you could actually potentially, you know, down the line, of course, this is with a lot of video data. You'd have to compile a lot of this stuff, but you know, you could potentially see a future where, you know, we know Kirk Cousins likes to, you know, has, like, on the quarterback's documentary, he was like plugging stuff on his brain to try to get the brain waves and whatnot. But potentially, you could be putting on like a virtual reality set and be able to kind of maybe run through some plays. And I can already picture a way that it could be implemented, just the video that they're capturing right now, because you get your playbook on an iPad, right? That's typically how it is nowadays. And so imagine when you flip, you know, you swipe to a page for a play, it's probably got a sketch of the play on that page. It's probably got some notes for, you know, what your rules are depending on what position you play and whatnot. And imagine if there was also just like a little button that the quarterback could like tap there to get a visual of you know, what that play actually looks like when, like you were saying, when you're going through the progressions or whatnot. You could do a lot of that work before you even ever hit the field for training camp. And, you know, players could be, you know, so much further ahead at this point.
And I'll take it even a step further. And, I mean, can you imagine? I think we can all imagine Kirk Cousins, like, if there's ever another quarterback series to come out. Obviously, they're doing receiver right now. But if, like, if we ever just get visual of Kirk Cousins just, like, in his house with a virtual reality headset.
Exactly.
Just, like, you know, practice throwing or, like, going through progressions. I mean, that would be a great sight to see. But I'll even take it a step further than that, Joe. I wonder if, and again, you have to compile a lot of data, but again, I can definitely see us getting there one day where I could even see it to where you have team meetings. Like, it sounds weird to say, it sounds crazy even just
metaverse?
Thinking about it, but like, yeah, like a metaverse virtual reality team meeting where it's like Raheem Morris, like, all right, everybody put on the headset.
Yeah.
And you're doing like a virtual, almost like a virtual reality walkthrough. Now, obviously, they're going to do stuff on the field too, but like, it just, the possibilities when you talk about this seem like they could almost be, you know, pretty wide and almost endless as far as, you know, what you can do. And even like watching film, seeing like, If they, like, say you have the offensive group or the quarterbacks watching film together, they see the point of view from Kirk Cousins, and they're kind of all seeing Kirk Cousins' point of view at one time. And as you said, maybe Kirk Cousins is pointing out, you know, hey, I saw this here tapping on this and talking about his progression that he saw and why he did whatever. And then the receiver's the same thing. And maybe when they all get together, they're all seeing different – they maybe click to Kirk Cousins' point of view for one piece of film and one breakdown. And then they go to a point of view of Drake London's point of view. So I mean, again, just what they could
endless,
do,
really.
The possibilities are endless. So I mean, that is just so cool.
And this kind of ties back into just like a more kind of overarching theme that I've noticed of this coaching staff so far, which is them just trying to leverage this technology as much as possible. Like, I wouldn't have had the idea to put a GoPro on a helmet, but you know, it seems like there really clearly is some usefulness for it. I think for me, the more obvious thing that they've implemented is they've got two big monitors next to the field now, and that what those monitors are there for is for the team there that is recording the all 22 footage that would typically, you would have that camera there, it would be loaded onto an SD card or whatever, and then after practice you go load it into the computers, and then they start using that for film, for cutups and everything. Now they're just instantly cutting it right after they run a play. That person running that camera can immediately transmit that last play to those big monitors. And so right after Kirk Cousins, you know, runs a mesh or whatever, and there's some problem with it, they can look over just before they run the next rep and look at it. If there was an issue, they can just suss it out right then and there, so that then they can just continue with practice, having kind of worked through that already, and just continue to then build on what you need to work on instead of having to wait until after practice and then go back and diagnose, okay, well, we'll do it again next time. Then you would get that next rep maybe the following day.
Right.
You know, it just speeds things up so much more. And for journalists, it helps you just look at what happened on the plays and take better notes. So that's helpful, too.
Exactly. And I mean, but just,
you know, the cool thing about this is that you would think that this idea came from some genius or Raheem Morris had this, you know, enlightening moment, and you know, when he woke up at 4:30 in the morning because he's such an overachiever. But actually what this was apparently was like some grad student from USC, from Southern Cal, who was like working for the Rams, who was like, hey, you know, I could do this for you if you guys want.
Wow.
And they were like, at the Rams, they're like, yeah, let's try doing that.
Are you serious?
So just some normal guy who had an idea and gets implemented, and watch, you know, in 3 years, I bet you every NFL team is using something like it.
Oh, without a doubt. And, I mean, when you talk about, too, just the efficiency, to your point of that, of being able to, again, say a miscue happens on a play, you see it's like, okay, maybe they move on or they run it again, and you know, it, like you said, it's fresh in their brain and they're not having to, you know, remember back to it when it comes to watching film. I mean, just the efficiency of it. And you know, just when we talk about how, you know, if you look back in the NFL maybe a couple of years, you remember how the narrative always used to be, oh, the defense is ahead of the offense. You know, the defense would be, you know, would look a little bit more sharper just because these offenses would take a while to mesh. I mean, that's not going to be the case anymore when you have stuff like this and they're just working so efficiently and they can just pinpoint everything and, you know, get everything together so quickly.
Yeah, and I think this is kind of transition us from this to something else, but I think kind of another theme around this idea is the way that Raheem Morris has constructed this staff, and I'm not just talking about the coaching staff, but just the overall staff that's under him. allows for so much specialization. And like, if you are talking about the actual, like, quote unquote coaching staff, you're talking about, you know, the quarterback's room has like four different quarterback's coaches. So like almost, you basically almost have an individual coach for all these guys,
right?
You know, which I'm sure is going to help them in their development, especially a young player like Michael Penix. And it's like that kind of all throughout pretty much. I mean, there's so many staff available, but when you have staff that are available just to kind of think about the, like the technology stuff, you know,
right,
like just to think about that and how we can best implement it. Like it seems like it's a really positive direction for this team to move in.
I think
if I had a criticism of the previous regime under Arthur Smith is that there was not a large enough staff that allowed for this stuff to happen. Now, you know, this is management styles. I'm sure Arthur Smith would say, you know, I just didn't want so many voices, you know, kind of the message can get muddled, those kinds of things.
Right.
But it seems like Raheem Morris is taking a much more kind of hands-off approach in terms of like, I'm delegating the responsibilities to you guys. Like it's your job to run this quarterback room. It's your job, you know, Zach Robinson, obviously, to kind of conceive this offense and Jimmy Lake on the defense. And so he can then kind of have that high level executive function type of coaching style, which I think is probably what he's best suited for. And I think it even extends down to the ways that they're going to actually play on the field to like take this further. Is I think with some of these players, I know that Troy Anderson was a guy that we wanted to talk about. Like,
yeah.
I think they're going to have like very specialized ways that they can use players like Troy Anderson and players like Arnold Ebiketie, who, you know, may not have like Arnold Ebiketie might not be the best run stopper, but he can rush the passer. And so how can we leverage him in the ways that best, you know, maximizes our team's potential? And Raheem Morris said it yesterday before practice, like, I'm not going to ask a player to do something that he can't do. I want to put players in positions where they're going to be able to succeed. So I think that's what we're really going to start seeing with a lot of these guys, especially on the defensive side of the ball, where they are kind of outmatched talent-wise relative to the NFL. They
right.
don't have the kind of experienced talent that you would expect. But if they can scheme up enough things and use these guys in these specialized situations, then I think that they feel like they can get league average defense, which I think is kind of what they're shooting for with the offense they have.
Well, again, with like you said, with the offense they have, if this defense can hold, you think if this defense can hold an offense to anywhere from 20 to maybe even 24 points a game, that just keeps the offense in it, and that gives you – definitely that's giving the offense a chance to go out there and win the ball game. But going back to the way Raheem Morris is doing things and having the extra staff to be forward thinking, it just all that's the word where I want to key on. It all just seems very forward thinking to me. And then your point about the defense too, I like, because it's all about when you feel like you necessarily, even if when you do have the talent, you still always want to play to your player's strengths. And it feels like with Arthur Smith, and he did this to an extent on offense, I think, but I think there was a part of it where you felt like he kind of more tried to fit players into his scheme rather than play to his player's strengths. And again, he definitely worked what he had, and he brought in players who fit his scheme as well, which is also what you have to do.
Yeah.
But it feels like Raheem Morris, what he's doing now, he is very much open to playing to his player's strengths.
You know what's interesting with the way that it's manifested? Because I'm like putting myself in the mind of Arthur Smith while you're saying that. And like, I feel like Arthur Smith, his response to that would be like, well, we want to play to our strengths, but we don't want to be one-dimensional, right? Like,
right.
We don't want to be predictable.
Right.
When it feels like the team probably could have been more predictable, I feel like fans just like, just be predictable.
Right.
Like, let's run Bijan like all the time.
Exactly.
Let's, do what we excel in. And, you know,
the unpredictable stuff got us in trouble.
Exactly. The things that fans were complaining about were the tight end arounds on the goal line to Jonnu Smith and the throw, you know, and Jonnu Smith throwing the ball and Jonnu Smith kicking off.
Right.
Jonnu Smith doing everything. No,
exactly.
But it's just funny how it happens. And for all this kind of, the forward thinkingness of this team, especially this offense, the way we conceive of it, what's Zach Robinson saying? We're going to give the ball to Bijan Robinson. We're not going to overcomplicate things. But I think in a way, he says that on a high level, that's true.
Yeah.
I think on a deeper level, a more schematic level, there's a lot more nuance that's going to kind of go into this offense that's going to allow them to have success. But, it should allow, I think, for all these players to have as much success as they possibly could have, because they're going to put them in those positions where they can be successful.
And it brings me to something else. I remember Raheem Morris saying, and I believe he said it on either Thursday or Friday of last week, and you correct me, I don't remember exactly which day, but he was talking about how to a defense, or an opposing offense, you know, the what they're doing might seem complicated, but when you break it down to its core, they do a good job of simplifying it for their players. So, you know, just I really like what this, again, staff has been all about thus far, the forward-thinkingness, playing to the player's strength, and it just seems like the vibe around here is really good as well. So all good stuff right now at Falcons training camp. That's where your boy Dylan Matthews and Falcons insider reporter Joe Patrick are live from right now. We're in the Ticketmaster Studios, if I can talk right. That's where we're kicking it right now. Hanging out with you until noon. We come back here 5 minutes from now. We're going back to talk about the Braves, and we're going to tell you why. You shouldn't be surprised if the Braves don't make a move at the trade deadline. That's next. Here, Dylan Matthews, Joe Patrick hanging out. Falcons training camp live at the Ticketmaster Studios. We'll be back right after this on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together, we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah. Radio 92.9 The Game. It is the hometown. Almost says the hometown tech. I'm so used to saying it. It is your boy Dylan Matthews. I do host hometown tech 5 a.m. to 6 a.m. Monday through Friday. But that is not what this is. This is a collaboration of two champions, Dylan Matthews and Joe Patrick. We are the two of the winners of the 92.9 The Game Summer Games. Shout out to Caleb Johnson out there. Shout out to Abe Gordon out there as well. But anywho, we are live here at Atlanta Falcons training camp in the Ticketmaster Studios hanging out with you until noon. We've been talking a lot about Atlanta Falcons football, of course, and a lot more interesting conversations about the Falcons to come, and including in 20 minutes from now, we're going to talk about who on the Falcons is it a make or break year for. That conversation coming up in 20 minutes. But right now, we're going to go back to some Braves baseball. We recapped yesterday's Braves win. They beat the Mets 4-0, ending a 6-game losing streak. Thank goodness. But we talked about this a little bit earlier, Joe, too, when we were talking about the Braves and recapping their win over the Mets at 9-20. Mm-hmm. We talked about how right now, I'm not sure if the Braves are going to make a move. I'm not sure if they should make a move before Tuesday's trade deadline on July 30th. I think I might be wrong on that. What's today? 28th. So, yeah, Tuesday's trade deadline. At this point, I think the Braves might be better off just standing pat, Joe.
I agree. And, like, is there a move that they could make that's really moving the needle? Like, is there one out there that, like, is going to change this team's fortunes?
I mean, I know Jazz Chisholm, he just went to the Yankees. If you really want to make a block, I don't know if they were ever in the Jazz Chisholm market, but if they want to make a blockbuster move, that could have been one. But Now he's off the board. He's gone to the Yankees. So, I mean, there are some guys who are out there, but it seems like been taken up to this point, and teams continue to make moves. Phillies have made a move. Mets have made a move. Obviously, the Marlins shipped away Jazz Chisholm. So at this point, it's just like, and you were making a good point earlier, like, I don't know if it's good business right now for Alex Anthopoulos to mortgage the future and maybe give away a guy like A.J. Smith-Shawver, or give away a guy like Ian Anderson or somebody like that, Nacho Alvarez, and, you know, bring a guy in who you don't know if they're going to have any sort of future on this team besides the end of this season. I just don't know if it's worth it at this point. If there's anybody out there, like you said, that you could bring in that's like, okay, he's definitely going to be upgrade over this person, and they're definitely going to be a part of this Braves future. Because if you think about it, the Braves, and this is a credit to Alex Anthopoulos, but the Braves, their roster is set. Like, Ronald Acuña Jr. is not going anywhere. Michael Harris isn't going anywhere. Jared Kelnick, you got team control on him for a good number of years. Ozzie Albies isn't going anywhere. Austin Riley isn't going anywhere. Orlando Arcia, maybe that's the most flexible position you have for him. And obviously Matt Olson isn't going anywhere. Sean Murphy isn't going anywhere. Like, your pitchers are pretty much set besides Max Fried and Charlie Morton. I mean, other than, like, starting pitchers, and, you know, Spencer Schwellenbach is making a case for himself, A.J. Smith-Shawver, things like that. But as far as position players go, not really a whole lot of moves you can make as far as, like, you could bring this guy in and make him a part of your team for the future. They just don't have that flexibility.
Exactly. There isn't, like, a pathway for players they bring in the middle of this season that would then contribute for them down the road. Or
exactly.
that at least at this point have, like, a clear pathway to helping the team. I'm thinking about a guy, for example, like Luis Robert from the White Sox,
that's
who is like kind of one of the hottest names out there.
Yeah.
And he's probably like the biggest name and the most productive player that's kind of currently being shopped around. And first of all, if you add him to this Braves team, is he actually making this Braves team significantly better to the point where they're challenging for a World Series? Probably not. And you're going to have to give up a lot for him. He's probably like going to be one of the more expensive kind of trade guys at this time of year out there. And then to the point that you just made, it's like, okay, you assign him, but then you've got Acuña and Michael Harris coming back, and Kelenic, of course, who you've got a plan for, Marcelo Zuna now, you know, we'll see what his future holds, but he's obviously looks like a great designated hitter for this team, so, you know, what would the future even be for someone like that? And that would be, at that point, a player that you gave up a lot of capital for in terms of prospects and things, so it's tough. It's just tough for Alex Anthopoulos right now at this moment. I think, ultimately, what ends up happening is I do think he will make some moves.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, I think it's important for him and the Braves as an organization to show that they're not quitting. Like,
yes.
I think, you know, even from a marketing standpoint and bringing people into the building, it makes sense for them to at least do something that would show, give fans a signal that they're not quitting on the season. But I don't think it's going to be anything that is significantly changing the outlook for this team and the prospects they have going forward.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point that you make about the optics of it and showing, hey, we're not giving up. We're still putting into this team instead of standing pat, or I don't think they would sell. They were never going to be sellers, so you never would take away anything really from this team. But again, the guys you're looking at right now, a Luis Robert, maybe even a Tommy Pham, who, again, who's not making this team. You add Tommy Pham to this team who's on an expiring contract. Yes, he fits what the Braves could use, but he's not putting them over the top and making them, oh, we got Tommy Pham, we're World Series contender now. That's not going to be the conversation.
And he's not a starter next year.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah.
Exactly. So he's not – that's not where the Braves are at, and that's not what the conversation would be. And I think they could also add some bullpen help. You know, you never have too many relievers. So you could do something like that as well. And maybe even they decide to go get a starter. I don't think at this point you go get a starter, just because I feel like you're pretty set, especially if Spencer Schwellenbach keeps doing what he's going to do. And then again, you have Ian Anderson coming back. You have A.J. Smith-Shawver coming back, who, again, A.J. Smith-Shawver, if he doesn't get hurt, I'm not sure if Spencer Schwellenbach ever gets really an opportunity unless there was another sort of injury.
Mm-hmm.
But so I think starters-wise, you're pretty set. You can always – you know, again, you can never have too many relievers. It's kind of like here at Falcons training camp, you can never have too many pass rushers. It's like that with relievers. But other than that, I mean, maybe you go get, again, a corner outfielder who is on an expiring contract, and that will be a rental. But other than that, there's not just too many moves to make.
Yeah, the one kind of core piece of optimism that I have around this is that Alex Anthopoulos always seems to make the right call this time of year. You know, it's like whether it is making major moves, whether it's, you know, making some minor adjustments around, you know, around the edges. He always seems to kind of know what buttons to push at this time of year that's going to give the team an edge, and seems to generally sign players that end up being core contributors. If you go back to, I remember in 2019, he signed like three quality bullpen relievers at that point in time. Obviously, that 2021 year when they won the World Series, we talked about that earlier, but just hit sevens on all of those. Right. Like, you know, that came up money for him with those three outfielders that he added. So you have to think that he's at least going to make the right moves. No matter what we say, and we'll talk about it, Braves fans will be talking about it up until the deadline. But I think you ultimately just have to say, you know, in Alex we trust at this point and just roll with that.
Exactly. And again, he's given us every reason to trust in him as well. So we'll see if the Braves can, if they end up making any moves and what Alex Anthopoulos ends up doing. But they do get a good win over the New York Mets yesterday. 4-0 final score. And again, we talked about Spencer Schwellenbach looking very good. Struck out a career best 11 strikeouts over 7 dominant innings. Only gave up 2 hits. And he helped end a 6-game losing streak that the Braves were on prior to their win.
He's the best individual story going for the Braves right now, feels like.
I mean, obviously, between him and Marcel?
Yeah. Him and Marcel. Obviously, you know, there's some others like Chris Sale, obviously, having his return performance. But, you know, I don't think anybody really expected Schwellenbach could have been this effective, especially like the way when he came on, you could see that he had the stuff. You know, you could see the talent was there. But I feel like so often you just don't see that actually manifest so quickly into like productive starting pitching outings, and we're starting to get that from Schwellenbach. We're to the point where it feels like you can kind of rely on it.
A couple things that I really like from Schwellenbach too is, one, he never really walks anybody.
Yes.
He's so good about
that's
not
how you
walking
get into Brian Snicker's rotation.
Exactly. And then the other thing too is when he does have a little bit of a hiccup or he does face some adversity, he is really good about not letting things snowball. Like he you know, if he gives up a single, he doesn't let that turn into a big inning. Or if you know he does by some chance give up a leadoff walk, he doesn't let that turn into a big inning. So he's very good at staying composed and getting out of jams and not letting things and not taking on too much damage and not having that one crucial bad inning that just blows up your whole start. He's very good at staying composed and bouncing back after facing, you know, maybe a little bit of adversity. So Spencer Schwellenbach, I mean, this could be a guy if the Braves, now we talked about this earlier, if the Braves do get into the playoffs, which I still am pretty optimistic that they will get into the playoffs in some way, shape, or form. Who knows if it's going to be that top wild card spot, because obviously they're battling with the Mets for that right now. But if they get into the postseason in some way, shape, or form, I do wonder what the role of Spencer Schwellenbach is going to be on this team, because the rotation is going to get a little bit tighter, Joe. It's going to be a lot of Max Fried, a lot of Chris Sale, a lot of Renato Lopez, a lot of Charlie Morton. And, I mean, you could even tighten a rotation to 3 pitchers if you want in the postseason. We've seen the Braves do that.
It's happened before, yeah.
Yeah, so I do wonder what the role of Spencer Schwellenbach is going to be. You have to think he's maybe going to have some sort of role in this postseason roster, especially if he keeps up doing what he's been doing.
Right, exactly. I'm kind of like of two minds about this. My initial thought is always like, well, if you get to the postseason, one of the reasons you get there is certainly going to be because of Spencer Schwellenbach.
Right.
Like he's going to have to perform well for this team to get the results they need to get to the playoffs, most likely. And so that would be that's like my first instinct. But then I'm like, okay, but who else is in this rotation, and who is Brian Snicker are going to lean on? Like, who is he going to trust when the rubber meets the road? And I think he's going to trust Charlie Morton. He's just the guy who's been there, done that.
Yep.
So when I start thinking about the actual pitchers, assuming they're all healthy by the time we get there, it's harder to see Schwellenbach being part of that rotation. But in the playoffs, you need to be prepared. You know, you need to be prepared for starters who give up runs early, because it's not a situation where you can allow a guy to just kind of go out there and get shelled. So he could definitely be a guy that they still have on the roster and their bullpen who's like, get ready to go.
Right.
If we might need you in like the second inning of some of these games.
And that's exactly what I'm thinking. If he ends up, they move him to the bullpen, but he's like, just as you said, that long relief type of guy where hopefully it doesn't happen, but if it does happen to where, you know, things start to unravel a little bit early for any one of the starters, whoever's starting, he can come in, he can settle things down, and obviously he can go however many innings you need him to go.
Mm-hmm. And I think the interesting thing that comes into this is with Ronaldo Lopez too, because he has the background as the relief pitcher, and you would think that, okay, well, maybe he's probably more suited to it. It's just hard to take him out of that role with how well he's pitched.
Right.
But you never know. Like, maybe in the back half of the season, he struggles more than he has early on. And maybe then, you know, Brian Snicker, you know, makes the other decision to put Schwellenbach in the rotation and use Ronaldo Lopez in that role.
And something else I'm thinking about too, you know, if they do want, because we have seen over the course of this year how they've been doing a good job of limiting the how often they pitch Reynaldo Lopez. Like sometimes they've given him and Chris Sale extra days rest. Like we've seen a 6-man rotation throughout this season. I wonder if they maybe try to do that where, you know they can give a Reynaldo Lopez or Chris Sale an extra day of rest if they kind of want to reset the rotation for any means. Like say, I'm just going to throw out a scenario here. Like say they know they have a chance to clinch against the team and they kind of want to reset the rotation and for, you know, if they know that they can reset the rotation for game one of whoever the next series is. I wonder if they throw a Spencer Schwellenbach out there knowing, like, say they have a 3-1 lead on a team or something, and they, you know, they're trying to close out, and they know they can, you know, they can afford to lose the game.
Yeah.
They throw a Spencer Schwellenbach out there when they have a 3-1 lead and like, hey, you can close. If you close it out, great. We can reset our rotation. Game one, it can be Max and Gutt on the line from there. And then if not, we'll, you know, we'll work on it from there. So I do wonder if they'll kind of use Spencer Schwellenbach too as a guy to give Reynaldo Lopez an extra day of rest if they need to, or give a Chris Sale an extra day of rest in the postseason if they want to. Now, when it comes to postseason, it's like, you know, you got to buckle up, buttercup. So it might be that approach, but also could be the same approach this year where, hey, we can afford to give a guy an extra a day of extra rest to another guy, so we might do that as well.
As Brian Snicker says, you have to wait and see how you get there before you actually make the decisions on what's going to happen.
Right.
But it's a champagne problem to have five good starting pitchers to choose from for a playoff series rotation.
Exactly. And then, and again, too, I've been mentioning this, and we've been talking about this, too, over the course when we were talking about Braves. You know, Ian Anderson maybe could find his way into the fold in some way, shape, or form. A.J. Smith-Shawver could find his way into the fold in some way, shape, or form, too. We'll see how that works out as well. But as far as Tuesday's trade deadline goes, it might be little to none when talking about moves the Braves make. But we will wait and see. All right, when we come back here 5 minutes from now, myself and Joe Patrick, we're going to be talking more Atlanta Falcons because there are some guys on this roster who we believe to make a break year for them. Who are those guys? Me and Joe Appeal talk about it next. It is your boy Dylan Matthews. It is Joe Patrick. We are here live in the Ticketmaster Studios up in Flowery Branch at Atlanta Falcons training camp. We're talking some Atlanta Falcons football. Who is it a maker?
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah. Radio 92.9 The Game. It is your boy Dylan Matthews. I do host Hometown Tech 5 a.m. to 6 a.m. Monday through Friday. But that is not what this is. This is a collaboration of two champions. Dylan Matthews and Joe Patrick. We are the two of the winners of the 92.9 The Game Summer Games. Shout out to Caleb Johnson out there. Shout out to Abe Gordon out there as well. But anywho, we are live here at Atlanta Falcons training camp in the Ticketmaster Studios hanging out with you until noon. We've been talking a lot about Atlanta Falcons football, of course, and a lot more interesting conversations about the Falcons to come, and including in 20 minutes from now, we're going to talk about who on the Falcons is it a make or break year for. That conversation coming up in 20 minutes. But right now, we're going to go back to some Braves baseball. We recapped yesterday's Braves win. They beat the Mets 4-0, ending a 6-game losing streak. Thank goodness. But we talked about this a little bit earlier, Joe, too, when we were talking about the Braves and recapping their win over the Mets at 9-20. Mm-hmm. We talked about how right now, I'm not sure if the Braves are going to make a move. I'm not sure if they should make a move before Tuesday's trade deadline on July 30th. I think I might be wrong on that. What's today? 28th. So, yeah, Tuesday's trade deadline. At this point, I think the Braves might be better off just standing pat, Joe.
I agree. And, like, is there a move that they could make that's really moving the needle? Like, is there one out there that, like, is going to change this team's fortunes?
I mean, I know Jazz Chisholm, he just went to the Yankees. If you really want to make a block, I don't know if they were ever in the Jazz Chisholm market, but if they want to make a blockbuster move, that could have been one. But Now he's off the board. He's gone to the Yankees. So, I mean, there are some guys who are out there, but it seems like been taken up to this point, and teams continue to make moves. Phillies have made a move. Mets have made a move. Obviously, the Marlins shipped away Jazz Chisholm. So at this point, it's just like, and you were making a good point earlier, like, I don't know if it's good business right now for Alex Anthopoulos to mortgage the future and maybe give away a guy like A.J. Smith-Shawver, or give away a guy like Ian Anderson or somebody like that, a Nacho Alvarez, and, you know, bring a guy in who you don't know if they're going to have any sort of future on this team besides the end of this season. I just don't know if it's worth it at this point. If there's anybody out there, like you said, that you could bring in that's like, okay, he's definitely going to be upgrade over this person, and they're definitely going to be a part of this Braves future. Because if you think about it, the Braves, and this is a credit to Alex Anthopoulos, but the Braves, their roster is set. Like, Ronald Acuña Jr. is not going anywhere. Michael Harris isn't going anywhere. Jarred Kelenic, you got team control on him for a good number of years. Ozzie Albies isn't going anywhere. Austin Riley isn't going anywhere. Orlando Arcia, maybe that's the most flexible position you have for him. And obviously Matt Olson isn't going anywhere. Sean Murphy isn't going anywhere. Like, your pitchers are pretty much set besides Max Fried and Charlie Morton. I mean, other than, like, starting pitchers, and, you know, Spencer Schwellenbach is making a case for himself, A.J. Smith-Shawver, things like that. But as far as position players go, not really a whole lot of moves you can make as far as, like, you could bring this guy in and make him a part of your team for the future. They just don't have that flexibility.
Exactly. There isn't, like, a pathway for players they bring in the middle of this season that would then contribute for them down the road. Or
exactly.
That at least at this point have, like, a clear pathway to helping the team. I'm thinking about a guy, for example, like Luis Robert from the White Sox,
who is
like kind of one of the hottest names out there.
Yeah.
And he's probably like the biggest name and the most productive player that's kind of currently being shopped around. And first of all, if you add him to this Braves team, is he actually making this Braves team significantly better to the point where they're challenging for a World Series? Probably not. And you're going to have to give up a lot for him. He's probably like going to be one of the more expensive kind of trade guys at this time of year out there. And then to the point that you just made, it's like, okay, you assign him, but then you've got Acuña and Michael Harris coming back, and Kelenic, of course, who you've got a plan for, Marcelo Zuna now. You know, we'll see what his future holds, but he obviously looks like a great designated hitter for this team. So, you know, what would the future even be for someone like that? And that would be, at that point, a player that you gave up a lot of capital for in terms of prospects and things. So it's tough. It's just tough for Alex Anthopoulos right now at this moment. I think ultimately what ends up happening is I do think he will make some moves.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, I think it's important for him and the Braves as an organization to show that they're not quitting. Like,
yes.
I think, you know, even from a marketing standpoint and bringing people into the building, it makes sense for them to at least do something that would show, give fans a signal that they're not quitting on the season. But I don't think it's going to be anything that is significantly changing the outlook for this team and the prospects they have going forward.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point that you make about the optics of it and showing, hey, we're not giving up. We're still putting into this team instead of standing pat, or I don't think they would sell. They were never going to be sellers, so you never would take away anything really from this team. But again, the guys you're looking at right now, a Luis Robert, maybe even a Tommy Pham, who, again, who's not making this team. You add Tommy Pham to this team who's on an expiring contract. He fits what the Braves could use, but he's not putting them over the top and making them, oh, we got Tommy Pham, we're World Series contender now. That's not going to be the conversation.
And he's not a starter next year.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah.
Exactly. So he's not. That's not where the Braves are at, and that's not what the conversation would be. And I think they could also add some bullpen help. You know, you never have too many relievers. So you could do something like that as well. And maybe even they decide to go get a starter. I don't think at this point you go get a starter just because I feel like you're pretty set, especially if Spencer Schwellenbach keeps doing what he's going to do. And then again, you have Ian Anderson coming back. You have A.J. Smith-Schauber coming back, who again, A.J. Smith-Schauber, if he doesn't get hurt, I'm not sure if Spencer Schwellenbach ever gets really an opportunity unless there was another sort of injury. Mm-hmm. But so I think starters-wise, you're pretty set. You can always, you know, again, you can never have too many relievers. It's kind of like here at Falcons training camp, you can never have too many pass rushers. It's like that with relievers. But other than that, I mean, maybe you go get, again, a corner outfielder who is on an expiring contract and that will be a rental. But other than that, there's not just too many moves to make.
Yeah, the one kind of core piece of optimism that I have around this is that Alex Anthopoulos always seems to make the right call this time of year. You know, it's like whether it is making major moves, whether it's, you know, making some minor adjustments around, you know, around the edges. He always seems to kind of know what buttons to push at this time of year that's going to give the team an edge, and seems to generally sign players that end up being core contributors. If you go back to, I remember in 2019, he signed like three quality bullpen relievers at that point in time. Obviously, that 2021 year when they won the World Series, we talked about that earlier, but just hit sevens on all of those. Right. Like, you know, that came up money for him with those three outfielders that he added. So you have to think that he's at least going to make the right moves. No matter what we say, and we'll talk about it, Braves fans will be talking about it up until the deadline. But I think you ultimately just have to say, you know, in Alex we trust at this point and just roll with that.
Exactly. And again, he's given us every reason to trust in him as well. So we'll see if the Braves can, if they end up making any moves and what Alex Anthopoulos ends up doing. But they do get a good win over the New York Mets yesterday, 4-0 final score. And again, we talked about Spencer Schwellenbach looking very good. Struck out a career best 11 strikeouts over 7 dominant innings. Only gave up 2 hits, and he helped end a 6-game losing streak that the Braves were on prior to their win.
He's the best individual story going for the Braves right now, feels like.
I mean, obviously, there's him and Marcel.
Him and Marcel. Obviously, you know, there's some others like Chris Sale, obviously, kind of having his return performance. But you know, I don't think anybody really expected Schwellenbach could have been this effective, especially like the way when he came on, you could see that he had the stuff, you know, you could see the talent was there. But I feel like so often you just don't see that actually manifest so quickly into like productive starting pitching outings, and we're starting to get that from Schwellenbach, where to the point where it feels like you can kind of rely on it.
A couple things that I really like from Schwellenbach too is, one, he never really walks anybody.
Yes.
He's so good about
that's
not
how you
walking
get into Brian Snicker's rotation.
Exactly. And then the other thing too is when he does have a little bit of a hiccup or he does face some adversity, he is really good about not letting things snowball. Like he you know, if he gives up a single, he doesn't let that turn into a big inning. Or if, you know, he does by some chance give up a leadoff walk, he doesn't let that turn into a big inning. So he's very good at staying composed and getting out of jams and not letting things and not taking on too much damage and not having that one crucial bad inning that just blows up your whole start. He's very good at staying composed and bouncing back after facing, you know, maybe a little bit of adversity. So Spencer Schwellenbach, I mean, this could be a guy if the Braves, now we talked about this earlier, if the Braves do get into the playoffs, which I still am pretty optimistic that they will get into the playoffs in some way, shape, or form. Who knows if it's going to be that top wild card spot, because obviously they're battling with the Mets for that right now. But if they get into the postseason in some way, shape, or form, I do wonder what the role of Spencer Schwellenbach is going to be on this team, because the rotation is going to get a little bit tighter, Joe. It's going to be a lot of Max Fried, a lot of Chris Sale, a lot of Reynaldo Lopez, a lot of Charlie Morton. And, I mean, you could even tighten a rotation to 3 pitchers if you want in the postseason. We've seen the Braves do that.
It's happened before.
Yeah, so I do wonder what the role of Spencer Schwellenbach is going to be. You have to think he's maybe going to have some sort of role in this postseason roster, especially if he keeps up doing what he's been doing.
Right, exactly. I'm kind of like of two minds about this. My initial thought is always like, well, if you get to the postseason, one of the reasons you get there is certainly going to be because of Spencer Schwellenbach.
Right.
Like he's going to have to perform well for this team to get the results they need to get to the playoffs, most likely. And so that would be that's like my first instinct. But then I'm like, okay, but who else is in this rotation, and who is Brian Snicker are going to lean on. Like, who is he going to trust
when
the rubber meets the road? And I think he's going to trust Charlie Morton. He's just the guy who's been there, done that.
Yep.
So when I start thinking about the actual pitchers, assuming they're all healthy by the time we get there, it's harder to see Schwellenbach being part of that rotation. But in the playoffs, you need to be prepared. You know, you need to be prepared for starters who give up runs early, because it's not a situation where you can allow a guy to just kind of go out there and get shelled. So he could definitely be a guy that they still have on the roster in their bullpen who's like, get ready to go.
Right.
If we might need you in like the second inning of some of these games.
And that's exactly what I'm thinking. If he ends up, they move him to the bullpen, but he's like, just as you said, that long relief type of guy where hopefully it doesn't happen. But if it does happen to where, you know, things start to unravel a little bit early for any one of the starters, whoever's starting, he can come in, he can settle things down. And obviously he can go however many innings you need him to go.
Mm-hmm. And I think the interesting thing that comes into this is with Ronaldo Lopez too, because he has the background as the relief pitcher, and you would think that, okay, well, maybe he's probably more suited to it. It's just hard to take him out of that role with how well he's pitched.
Right.
But you never know. Like, maybe in the back half of the season, he struggles more than he has early on. And maybe then, you know, Brian Snicker, you know, makes the other decision to put Schwellenbach in the rotation and use Ronaldo Lopez in that role.
And something else I'm thinking about too, you know, if they do want, because we have seen over the course of this year how they've been doing a good job of limiting the how often they pitch Ronaldo Lopez. Like, sometimes they've given him and Chris Sale extra days rest. Like, we've seen a 6-man rotation throughout this season. I wonder if they maybe try to do that where, you know they can give a Ronaldo Lopez or a Chris Sale an extra day of rest if they kind of want to reset the rotation for any means. Like, say, I'm just going to throw out a scenario here. Like, say they know they have a chance to clinch against the team and they kind of want to reset the rotation, and for, you know, if they know that they can reset the rotation for game one of whoever the next series is, I wonder if they throw a Spencer Schwellenbach out there knowing, like, say they have a 3-1 lead on a team or something, and they, you know, they're trying to close out and they know they can, you know, they can afford to lose the game.
Yeah.
They throw a Spencer Schwellenbach out there when they have a 3-1 lead and, like, hey, you can close, if you close it out, great, we can reset our rotation. Game one, it can be Max and go down the line from there. And then if not, we'll work on it from there. So I do wonder if they'll kind of use Spencer Schwellenbach too as a guy to give Ronaldo Lopez an extra day of rest if they need to, or give a Chris Sale an extra day of rest in the postseason if they want to. Now, when it comes to postseason, it's like, you know, you got to buckle up, buttercup. So it might be that approach, but also could be the same approach this year where, hey, we can afford to give a guy a day of extra rest to another guy, so we might do that as well.
As Brian Snicker says, you have to wait and see how you get there before you actually make the decisions on what's going to happen.
Right.
But it's a champagne problem to have five good starting pitchers to choose from for a playoff series rotation.
Exactly. And again, too, I've been mentioning this, and we've been talking about this, too, over the course when we were talking about Braves. You know, Ian Anderson maybe could find his way into the fold in some way, shape, or form. A.J. Smith-Shawver could find his way into the fold in some way, shape, or form, too. We'll see how that works out as well. But as far as Tuesday's trade deadline goes, it might be little to none when talking about moves the Braves make. But we will wait and see. All right, when we come back here 5 minutes from now, myself and Joe Patrick, we're going to be talking more Atlanta Falcons, because there are some guys on this roster who we believe to make a break year for them. Who are those guys? Me and Joe P will talk about it next. It is your boy Dylan Matthews. It is Joe Patrick. We are here live in the Ticketmaster Studios up in Flowery Branch at Atlanta Falcons training camp. We're talking some Atlanta Falcons football. Who is it a make or break year for? That's next here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is your boy Dylan Matthews hanging out with our very own Falcons insider and reporter Joe Patrick. Been having a fun time here in the Ticketmaster Studios up in Flowery Branch. Atlanta Falcons practice for today. Gonna get going here in just over 30 minutes, 11:15 the start time here. So we'll get to see the fellas practice for a little bit after we finish our show. And then obviously they'll have some people talking to the media, and it'll be a good time here on a Sunday. But speaking of the Falcons, Joe, I want to get into this conversation with you, and it kind of ties into something you were talking about. And again, one of your Falcons training camp recap videos, which again, follow him at JAPatrick200 to get those. He's giving you a nice recap of Falcons practice after every day of practice. And all going throughout this training camp. But one of the things you talked about is Troy Andersen and how, you know, it seems like it could be a couple of things. You touched on a few scenarios. It could be one, obviously he's coming off the pectoral injury, and they could be, you know, just kind of limiting his reps. But it does seem like Nate Landman and Caden Ellis, as far as, you know, if you think about a first team defense, seems like they've been getting most of the reps in that position. And that got me wondering if it's a, and I don't know if Troy Andersen fits all the way into this, but I am wondering, who on the Falcons this season is it a make-or-break season for?
Yeah, it's funny that we were having this conversation in this segment in particular, Dylan, because right across the wall from behind you, Kyle Smith, this team's assistant general manager, is going to be scheduled to speak in roughly 2 minutes here, where I'm sure he's going to be asked a lot of these types of questions, because you know, there's been significant draft capital put into these players who have just – sometimes it's not a fault of their own, like with Troy Andersen with the pectoral injury last year. Like, nothing you can really do about that. But ultimately, he's not providing value if he's hurt. So these players that they've drafted in some of these spots, thinking about Troy, thinking about Arnold Ebiketie, D'Angelo Malone, these like second, third round guys, you really need them to provide value for you if you want to be a successful NFL team. It's so funny because there's so much coverage around free agency, and of course Falcons know how important that is with the quarterback they've got now. Not to say that it's not important, but and even in the draft coverage, how much of the draft coverage is related to the first 10 picks of a draft or the first 130 picks of a draft versus the rest of the draft, which is really where the success of a team is built.
Exactly.
And that's where this Falcons team needs to have those players finally kind of step up. You know, it's been a couple of years for them now. This is the kind of time in their careers where you would expect to see a leveling up of what they could do on a football field. And if they don't do that, then the team has to plan around that and start to, you know, draft for who's going to be coming in to hopefully give them what they need in those spots.
You said one of the guys that I think is very, very much on the list of this is a make or break year for him. We'll get to him in a second, but I do want to talk about Troy Andersen just a little bit more while we're on the topic of him, because you talked about how maybe potentially, and again, in one of your training recap videos, maybe potentially Troy Andersen could be used in more of a versatile role this year. So I'm going to ask you, do you think we could see Troy Andersen maybe in, obviously he'll play some inside linebacker, but do you think we could see him at an outside linebacker role, maybe even edge rusher type role, because of the versatility that he does have? He's got some ability, he's got some speed where he can cover probably a tight end, or, you know, I don't know about a running back, but he does have some ability as a pass rusher as well, too. So do you think we could see Troy Andersen more of a versatile role this season?
Absolutely. I think Caden Ellis as well, and we've seen that already a little bit, where with him lining up as an edge or like on the edge, on the line of scrimmage, where he really was, as when he played for the Saints, he was really kind of an on-ball linebacker there who rushed the passer. And I think that was probably the plan for him, but Troy Andersen got hurt, so they needed him to play middle linebacker. Yeah. And so with Troy, I think, you know, it's a blessing that they had what they got from Nate Landman last year, because that gave them a guy who can come in on first and second downs and really give them the centerpiece of what they need to be one of the premier run defenses in the NFL. Now, I don't know if it'll be as good this year when you're missing guys like Calais Campbell and Bud Dupree, who helped in that respect as well. But but Nate Landman gives you that. So then that kind of frees up the team in how they want to deploy Troy.
Right.
There you go.
Troy. That's a saying right there, Joy.
You see my eyes light up when that just happened spontaneously?
You saw the light bulb. Yeah. Oh, I just came up with it. I did something with
it. He's so fast. He's got so many physical gifts. I think they can line him up at the edge. He can get to the quarterback so fast. I had some conversations with Arthur Smith about this in previous years. Like, if he's unblocked, like, he's there in the flash of an eye. And his speed can even catch, you know, got like running backs who chip, like he'd catch those guys off guard just because he's not the kind of physical type that they would expect to see out there. But he also provides so much in coverage. And the way that you hear coaches kind of talk about it is kind of, it's like a puzzle, like putting together a coverage scheme is like putting together a puzzle, so to speak. And you've got all these players who cover different zones or different players or whatever. And Troy Andersen, because he's so fast and he's got these physical gifts, he can do so many different things. It allows you to put the puzzle together in different ways. And right. when you could put the puzzle together in different ways, that's what confuses quarterbacks. And so it might not even just be his own, like the things that he's executing on a play that like drives the defense, but it could be just the way that he's used could actually positively impact some of his teammates because it yeah. throws the quarterback off guard and or you know off kilter, and then you know they make a mistake. And so he's going to be a very instrumental piece for this team, despite the fact that he might not be like on the starting lineup graphics, you know, because Nate Landman will be out there for first down, which is, you know, on more of a running play.
Yeah. And I want to get back to make or break seasons because, again, with Troy Anderson, just because of the injuries, and he's coming into, what, year three, I don't know if he necessarily fits in that make or break category quite yet, but you're definitely looking at him to have a breakout year. But yeah. I don't know if it's more so we would like him to make, but it's not necessarily break this year for him. But one of those guys I do think it's make or break for is Hunter Debiketie, a guy you brought up earlier. I mean, he's going into year four, I believe, for him. This is going to be year four.
It'll be year three for him as
year
well.
Year three for yeah. Debiketie. Okay.
Same draft class as Troy.
But still, with the fact of Hunter Debiketie, you know, we've seen the flashes.
I'm second-guessing myself. I'll look this up while you talk. Go ahead.
We've seen the flashes of Arnold Ebiketie, and, you know, he was right behind Calais Campbell and Bud Dupree for that sack lead last year. Obviously, Calais and Bud had the team lead. Tied for the team lead with 6.5. Arnold Ebiketie had 6. But I think he's a guy who it's really going to be important for him to have a good season to show that he can be one of these future pass rushers for the Falcons. And obviously they're hoping for that in Braylon Trice as well. But for Ebiketie, like you said, he's established. He's gotten his feet wet now in the NFL. Like, this feels like the year that he can really show, hey, I am here to stay. I can be one of these guys. I can be that pass rusher that can get anywhere from 8 to hopefully double-digit sacks a season. So I'm really looking to Arnold Ebiketie as being one of those guys to have a make-or-break season. And look, I hope that he can be a guy that, again, has anywhere from 8 to 10 sacks a year and really can be one of the mainstays of this Falcons pass rush. And that's what we could use this season because, obviously, you know, you're going to have Ebiketie. You're going to have guys like Lorenzo Carter. But you're going to have a few younger guys on this as far as edge rushers go, too, the Braylon Trices of the world. And it's going to help because you're going to have some veterans on the interior as far as David Onyemata, Grady Jarrett, even Saquon Graham, who's shown flashes as well. But you're going to also have young guys on the interior as well when you talk about Zach Harrison. so I just think it's going to be really key for Arnold Ebiketie to finally show and have that really consistent year and really, honestly, a breakout season.
Let me ask you this, Dylan. And by the way, they were in the same draft class.
Okay, there
trust
you go.
Your gut, Joe. You got this.
You knew the answer, Joe.
They had 2 second-round picks and 2 third-round picks in that draft. So that was like
That's
it was
right.
Arnold Ebiketie, Troy Anderson, who they got for Julio, yep. Desmond Ridder, and D'Angelo Malone. Let me ask you this, though. Yeah. If the Falcons were to deploy AK in a similar way they did last year, which is kind of as a designated pass rusher, that's right. kind of the new term amongst NFL DPR, designated yeah. pass rusher, would that be but let's say he did it well. Let's say he got, you know, 10 sacks. I think he had 6 last year.
He did.
Let's say he has 10 this year in a designated pass rusher role. Would that satisfy you?
Because yeah,
I think for
absolutely.
Me it does, right? Like, even if he's not playing 3 downs,
no,
if he's
yeah.
being productive when he's out there, then you're getting what you need as a team. And you're probably better off by putting somebody else in some of those earlier downs that are going to be able to do a better job in those situations than he would be able to do.
Yeah, absolutely. If he gives me anywhere from 8 to 10 sacks this year, I'll be happy. And again, I don't care about, as you said, the percentage of snaps that he gets. As long as, like you said, he's productive with the snaps he yeah. gets, I actually like – I don't think it's a problem if you see a lot of rotation in this Falcons defensive line, because that's what you want, right? You want to be able to rotate guys, and obviously you want them to get a rhythm of some sort too, but there's nothing wrong with being able to keep guys fresh on that defensive line and keep throwing different defensive linemen and different defensive line rotations at opposing offenses, you know? So if you can rotate those guys in and out, keep them fresh throughout the duration of the game, I love that, as long as those guys, like you said, are being productive.
I totally agree with you, and I think that that's kind of the plan, frankly. And I think that that's what Raheem Morris and Jimmy Lake did. They were in L.A. last year, you know, with all these young, talented pieces. Or, I'm sorry, they were young. Some of them are talented, of course.
Yeah.
But they were generally considered to be vastly under talented relative to the rest of the NFL, and they go out there and they put together a defense that was good enough for that Rams team to be pretty competitive in a year where everybody thought the Rams were going to be one of the worst teams in football, frankly. And so that's what you're looking for out of this defense. And Frank, and honestly, like, the talent on this defense is in my opinion better than what the Rams had last year, and you would hope that that would then parlay into potentially an even better defense. And I don't want to get too out over my skis, because there's definitely a way for this to go wrong on defense. It's a gamble for them to have not really invested on this side of the ball, kind of the opposite of what the Falcons did last year, where they brought in Calais Campbell and all these guys, these experienced guys on the defensive side. Jesse Bates, of course, turned out to be a really massive signing for the team, but they didn't put as much investment on the offensive side of the ball. We saw them struggle. It's an offensive league. It's a quarterback-driven league. That's where the resources went this offseason. And the gamble is going to be, can we actually do these kinds of things like we've been talking about with Arnold Ebikadi, with Troy Anderson, even with Nate Lamond? Like, he is also kind of a specialized piece, even if he is the quote-unquote starter at the beginning of the game. All these players on this defense are going to have an important role to play, and especially when you think about the injuries that come into play over the course of a season.
Right.
But yeah, they're going to need contributions from all of these guys. And I think it should make all these young defensive players pretty excited about the fact that they're probably going to get opportunities to go out there and earn their reps.
And that's a good point that I didn't even think about yet, as far as, you know, not only obviously in training camp, obviously all these guys can get their reps, but probably when the season comes along too, all these guys are going to get reps as well. Taquan Graham, he's going to get plenty of reps.
Oh, yeah.
Zach Harrison, he's going to get plenty of reps. Arnold Ebikadi, plenty of reps. I mean, you even see Braylon Trice probably get in there and obviously get some reps too. So, I mean, there's going to be guys who get plenty of opportunity to show that they can be a mainstay on this team. And I do want to ask you too, do you have anybody that you're thinking about that's on the top of your list? And it can be on offense or defense, by the way, as far as I know we've been focusing on defense because obviously we're talking about Troy Anderson
or
Arnold Ebikadi and things of that nature. But is there anybody who you think this is a make or break year for them on this Falcons team?
Yeah, Kyle Pitts.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. That's probably the main guy.
It's a big one, but I mean, like, listen, it's going to be interesting for this Falcons team and see how they evolve over the next like 3 or 4 seasons, honestly, because of the way that they've drafted has been so abnormal and just kind of stockpiling all these skill position guys. But obviously Kyle Pitts is a guy who you can build around, but I think that they need to see that this year. They need to see evidence that this is a guy that we can make the centerpiece of our offense for the next 4 years.
Yeah, we need to see rookie year Kyle Pitts, who, you know, he almost broke Mike Ditka's rookie receiving tight end record.
I just went back and was rewatching some of his 2021 highlights. If they get that, this team is going to be incredible. I mean, like the potential, it's like you forget how much potential there is there.
Right, and again, quarterback play, definitely. Quarterback and health were probably the two biggest things that kind of hampered Kyle Pitts these last two seasons, and he looks very much healthy. He looks probably the healthiest he's ever been as long as he's been in Atlanta Falcons uniform, and quarterback play should not be a problem this year. So the two things that have hampered him over the last 2 years seem to very much be in his favor this season. So to your point, he's set up to have a breakout season, and he should be on the make side of the make or break side of things, but we will see what happens. All right, we are heading into the final hour of this amazing show of champions between myself and
the show Joe of Patrick, champions.
The show of champions. And when we come back here 5 minutes from now, we're going to get into some NFL headlines, because the Packers, they did what they had to do. Woo. But are they going to regret their decision? That's up next here. Dylan Matthews, Joe Patrick, hanging out in the Ticketmaster Studios live at Atlanta Falcons training camp. We'll talk some NFL right after this on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is your boy Dylan Matthews hanging out with our very own Falcons insider and reporter Joe Patrick. Been having a fun time here in the Ticketmaster Studios up in Flowery Branch. Atlanta Falcons practice for today. Going to get going here in just over 30 minutes, 11:15 the start time here. So we'll get to see the fellas practice for a little bit after we finish our show. And then obviously they'll have some people talking to the media, and it'll be a good time here on a Sunday. But speaking of the Falcons, Joe, I want to get into this conversation with you, and it kind of ties into something you were talking about And again, one of your Falcons training camp recap videos, which again, follow him at JAPatrick200 to get those. He's giving you a nice recap of Falcons practice after every day of practice and all going throughout this training camp. But one of the things you talked about is Troy Anderson and how, you know, it seems like it could be a couple of things. You touched on a few scenarios. It could be one, obviously he's coming off the pectoral injury, and they could be, you know, just kind of limiting his reps. But it does seem like Nate Landman and Caden Ellis, as far as, you know, if you think about a first team defense, seems like they've been getting most of the reps in that position. And that got me wondering if it's and I don't know if Troy Anderson fits all the way into this, but I am wondering, who on the Falcons this season is it a make-or-break season for?
Yeah, it's funny that we were having this conversation in this segment in particular, Dylan, because right across the wall from behind you, Kyle Smith, this team's assistant general manager, is going to be scheduled to speak in roughly 2 minutes here, where I'm sure he's going to be asked a lot of these types of questions, because you know, there's been significant draft capital put into these players who have just – sometimes it's not a fault of their own, like with Troy Anderson with the pectoral injury last year. Like, nothing you can really do about that. But ultimately, he's not providing value if he's hurt. So these players that they've drafted in some of these spots, thinking about Troy, thinking about Arnold Ebiketie, D'Angelo Malone, these like second, third round guys, you really need them to provide value for you if you want to be a successful NFL team. It's so funny because there's so much coverage around free agency, and of course Falcons know how important that is with the quarterback they've got now. Not to say that it's not important, but and even in the draft coverage, how much of the draft coverage is related to the first 10 picks of a draft or the first 30 picks of a draft versus the rest of the draft, which is really where the success of a team is built.
Exactly.
And that's where this Falcons team needs to have those players finally kind of step up. You know, it's been a couple of years for them now. This is the kind of time in their careers where you would expect to see a leveling up of what they could do on a football field. And if they don't do that, then the team has to plan around that and start to, you know, draft for who's going to be coming in to hopefully give them what they need in those spots.
You said one of the guys that I think is very, very much on the list of this is a make or break year for him. We'll get to him in a second, but I do want to talk about Troy Anderson just a little bit more while we're on the topic of him, because you talked about how maybe potentially, and again, in one of your training recap videos, maybe potentially Troy Anderson could be used in more of a versatile role this year. So I'm going to ask you, do you think we could see Troy Anderson maybe in, obviously he'll play some inside linebacker, but do you think we could see him at an outside linebacker role, maybe even edge rusher type role, because of the versatility that he does have? He's got some ability, he's got some speed where he can cover probably a tight end, or, you know, I don't know about a running back, but he does have some ability as a pass rusher as well, too. So do you think we could see Troy Anderson more of a versatile role this season?
Absolutely. I think Caden Ellis as well, and we've seen that already a little bit, where with him lining up as an edge or like on the edge, on the line of scrimmage, where he really was, as when he played for the Saints, he was really kind of an on-ball linebacker there who rushed the passer. And I think that that was probably the plan for him, but you know, Troy Anderson got hurt, so they needed him to play middle linebacker.
Yeah.
And so with Troy, I think, you know, it's a blessing that they had what they got from Nate Landman last year, because that gave them a guy who can come in on first downs, first and second downs, and really give them the centerpiece of what they need to be one of the premier run defenses in the NFL. Now, I don't know if it'll be as good this year when you're missing guys like Calais Campbell and Bud Dupree, who helped in that respect as well. But but Nate Landman gives you that. So then that kind of frees up the team in how they want to deploy Troy.
Right.
There you go.
Troy. That's a saying right there, Joy.
You see my eyes light up when that just happened spontaneously?
Saw the light bulb. Yeah. Oh, I just came up with it. I did something with
it. But, you know, he's so fast. He's got so many physical gifts. I think they can line him up at the edge. He can get to the quarterback so fast. I had some conversations with Arthur Smith about this in previous years. Like, if he's unblocked, like, he's there in the flash of an eye. And his speed can even catch, you know, got like running backs who chip, like he'd catch those guys off guard just because he's not the kind of physical type that they would expect to see out there. But he also provides so much in coverage. And the way that you hear coaches kind of talk about it is kind of, it's like a puzzle. Like putting together a coverage scheme is like putting together a puzzle, so to speak. And you've got all these players who cover different zones or different players or whatever. And Troy Anderson, because he's so fast and he's got these physical gifts, he can do so many different things. It allows you to put the puzzle together in different ways. And when you can put the puzzle together in different ways, that's what confuses quarterbacks. And so it might not even just be his own, like, the things that he's executing on a play that, like, drives the defense, but it could be just the way that he's used could actually positively impact some of his teammates because it throws the quarterback off guard off kilter, and then, you know, they make a mistake. And so he's going to be a very instrumental piece for this team, despite the fact that might not be, like, on the starting lineup graphics, you know, because Nate Landman will be out there for first down, which is, you know, on more of a running play.
Yeah, and I want to get back to make or break seasons because, again, with Trey Anderson, just because of the injuries, and he's coming into, what, year three, I don't know if he necessarily fits in that make or break category quite yet, but you're definitely looking at him to have a breakout year, but I don't know if it's more so we would like him to make, but it's not necessarily break this year for him. But one of those guys I do think it's make or break for is Hunter Debakati, a guy you brought up earlier. I mean, he's going into year four, I believe, for him. This is going to be year four.
It'll be year three for him as
year
well.
Year three for Debakati. Yeah. Okay.
Same draft class as Troy.
But still, with the fact of Hunter Debakati, you know, we've seen the flashes.
I'm second-guessing myself. I'll look this up while you talk. Go ahead.
We've seen the flashes of Arden Bacady, and, you know, he was right behind Calais Campbell and Bud Dupree for that sack lead last year. Obviously, Calais and Bud had the team lead, tied for the team lead with 6.5. Arden Bacady had 6. But I think he's a guy who it's really going to be important for him to have a good season to show that he can be one of these future pass rushers for the Falcons. And obviously they're hoping for that in Braylon Trice as well. But for Ebukadi, like you said, he's established. He's gotten his feet wet now in the NFL. Like, this feels like the year that he can really show, hey, I am here to stay. I can be one of these guys. I can be that pass rusher that can get anywhere from 8 to hopefully double-digit sacks a season. So I'm really looking to Arnold Ebukadi as being one of those guys that have a make-or-break season. And look, I hope that he can be a guy that, again, has anywhere from 8 to 10 sacks a year and really can be one of the mainstays of this Falcons pass rush. And that's what we could use this season because, obviously, you know, you're going to have Ebukadi, you're going to have guys like Lorenzo Carter, but you're going to have a few younger guys on this as far as edge rushers go, too, the Braylon Trices of the world. And it's going to help because you're going to have some veterans on the interior as far as David Onyemata, Grady Jarrett, even Taquan Graham, who's shown flashes as well. But you're going to also have young guys on the interior as well when you talk about a Zach Harrison. So I just think it's going to be really key for Arnold Ebukadi to finally show and have that really consistent year and really, honestly, a breakout season.
Let me ask you this, Dylan. And by the way, they were in the same draft class.
Okay, there
trust
you go.
Your gut, Joe. You got this.
You knew the answer, Joe.
They had 2 second-round picks and 2 third-round picks in that draft. So that was like
That's
it was
right.
Arnold Ebukadi, Troy Anderson, who they got for Julio, Desmond Ridder, and D'Angelo Malone. Let me ask you this, though. Yeah. If the Falcons were to deploy AK in a similar way they did last year, which is kind of as a designated pass rusher, that's kind of the new term amongst NFL DPR, designated pass rusher, would that be – but let's say he did it well. Let's say he got, you know, 10 sacks. I think he had 6 last year.
He did.
Let's say he has 10 this year in a designated pass rusher role. Would that satisfy you?
Because
I think for me it does, right? Like, even if he's not playing 3 downs,
if he's
being productive when he's out there, then you're getting what you need as a team. And you're probably better off by putting somebody else in some of those earlier downs that are going to be able to do a better job in those situations than he would be able to do.
Yeah, absolutely. If he gives me anywhere from 8 to 10 sacks this year, I'll be happy. And again, I don't care about, as you said, the percentage of snaps that he gets. As long as, like you said, he's productive with the snaps he gets. I don't think it's a problem if you see a lot of rotation in this Falcons defensive line because that's what you want, right? You want to be able to rotate guys, and obviously you want them to get a rhythm of some sort too, but there's nothing wrong with being able to keep guys fresh on that defensive line and keep throwing different defensive linemen and different defensive line rotations at opposing offenses, you know? So if you can rotate those guys in and out, keep them fresh throughout the duration of the game, I love that, as long as those guys, like you said, are being productive.
I totally agree with you, and I think that that's kind of the plan, frankly. And I think that that's what Raheem Morris and Jimmy Lake did. They were in L.A. last year, you know, with all these young, talented pieces. They were young. Some of them are talented, of course.
Yeah.
But, you know, they were generally considered to be vastly under talented relative to
right.
the rest of the NFL. And they go out there and they put together a defense that was good enough for that Rams team to be pretty competitive.
Yeah.
In a year where everybody thought the Rams were going to be one of the worst teams in football, frankly. And so that's what you're looking for out of this defense. And Frank, and honestly, like the talent on this defense is in my opinion, better than what the Rams had last year. And you would hope that that would then parlay into potentially an even better defense. And I don't want to get too out over my skis because there's definitely a way for this to go wrong on defense. It's a gamble for them to have not really invested on this side of the ball. Kind of the opposite yeah. of what the Falcons did last year, where they brought in Calais Campbell and all these guys, these experienced guys on the defensive side. Jesse Bates, of course,
yeah.
proved out, turned out to be a you know, really massive signing for the team.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't put as much investment on the offensive side of the ball. We saw them struggle. It's an offensive league. It's a quarterback-driven league. That's where the resources went this offseason. And the gamble is going to be, can we actually do these kinds of things like we've been talking about with Arnold Ebikadi, with Troy Anderson, even with Nate Lamond. Like he is also kind of a specialized piece, even if he is the quote-unquote starter at the beginning of the game. All these players on this defense are going to have an important role to play, and especially when you think about the injuries that come into play over the course of a season.
Right.
But yeah, they're going to need contributions from all of these guys. And it should, I think it should make all these young defensive players pretty excited about the fact that they're probably going to get opportunities to go out there and you know, earn their reps.
And that's a good point that I didn't even think about yet as far as, you know, not only obviously in training camp, obviously all these guys can get their reps, but probably when the season comes along too, all these guys are going to get reps as well. Taquan Graham, he's going to get plenty of reps.
Oh, yeah.
Zach Harrison, he's going to get plenty of reps. Arnold Ebikadi, plenty of reps. I mean, you even see Braylon Trice probably get in there and obviously get some reps too. So, I mean, there's going to be guys who get plenty of opportunity to show that they can be a mainstay on this team. And I do want to ask you too, do you have anybody that you're thinking about that's on the top of your list? And it can be on offense or defense, by the way, as far as I know we've been focusing on defense because obviously we're talking about Troy Anderson
sure.
and Arnold Ebikadi and things of that nature. But is there anybody who you think this is a make or break year for them on this Falcons team?
Yeah, Kyle Pitts.
Oh, that's a good guy. Yeah. That's probably the main guy.
It's a big
honestly.
One. But yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, listen, it, you know, it's going to be interesting for this Falcons team and see how they evolve over the next like 3 or 4 seasons, honestly, because of the way that they've drafted has been so abnormal and just kind of stockpiling all these skill position guys. But obviously Kyle Pitts is a guy who you can build around, but I think that they need to see that this year. They need to see evidence that this is a guy that we can make the centerpiece of our offense for the next 4 years.
Yeah, we need to see rookie year Kyle Pitts, who, you know, he almost broke Mike Ditka's rookie receiving tight end record.
I just went back and was rewatching some of his 2021 highlights. If they get that, this team is going to be incredible. I mean, like the potential, it's like you forget how much potential there is there.
Right, and again, quarterback play, definitely. Quarterback and health were probably the two biggest things that kind of hampered Kyle Pitts these last 2 seasons, and he looks very much healthy. He looks probably the healthiest he's ever been as long as he's been in the Atlanta Falcons uniform, and quarterback play should not be a problem this year. So the two things that have hampered him over the last 2 years seem to very much be in his favor this season. So to your point, he's set up to have a breakout season, and he should be on the make side of the make or break side of things, but we will see what happens. All right, we are heading into the final hour of this amazing show of champions between myself and
the show of champions. Patrick,
the show of champions. And when we come back here 5 minutes from now, we're going to get into some NFL headlines because the Packers, they did what they had Ooh. To do.
Ooh.
But are they going to regret their decision? That's up next here. Dylan Matthews, Joe Patrick, hanging out in the Ticketmaster Studios live at Atlanta Falcons training camp. We'll talk some NFL right after this on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together, we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.